This is The Adam Ritz Show, a public affairs talk show touching on community, health, foundations, and more. The Adam Ritz Show is underwritten by Vibonomics, an audio out-of-home advertising marketplace and audio experience company. Info at Vibonomics.com. And now, from the Vibonomics studios, please welcome your public affairs radio host, Adam Ritz.
Hey there, everybody. Adam Ritz with you. It's the Adam Ritz Show. We cover public affairs, and I can't do it without Jay Baker joining me on the phone. Hi, Jay. How's it going?
It is going great, Adam, and I hope the same is going for you.
Well, it was. There was some pretty exciting news for women's sports over the last week. If you watched Iowa and South Carolina in the women's NCAA National Championship, about a week ago, it aired on ABC on a Sunday afternoon. And did you watch that game, first of all?
I sure did. And it was pretty amazing, the fanfare associated with it.
A lot of buzz with South Carolina being undefeated and favored, with Iowa having Caitlin Clark, who's just gotten so much well-deserved attention over her career, especially breaking the NCAA scoring record this past season. So there was a lot of highlights and reason to watch that game. Also being on ABC, national television, a Sunday afternoon, they were talking about how the ratings could break records. And not only did it break a record, but it broke a record that some thought wouldn't happen. And that is the following day on Monday, which was April 8th, was the men's national championship between UConn and Purdue. And the women's game on Sunday had higher ratings. More people watched the women's national championship than the men's national championship. That's the first time it's ever happened in the history of planet Earth. Isn't that amazing?
No, that is amazing. And it just shows you what, a handful of really prominent players puts a lot of eyeballs on that game.
Now, I didn't mention on purpose, last weekend we did talk about the madness that is March in the final quattro teams that were in the men's final. I didn't mention this because I didn't want to jinx it, but I am a Purdue Boilermaker, born and raised and a graduate alum of Purdue. And I didn't want to jinx it and talk about the game because, by the time, if someone listened to the show in podcast form, they'd be like, oh, Purdue lost, ha, 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 UConn beat Purdue. Well, now that the game is history and we all know that UConn won their sixth national championship, I'm a little sad, it's a little bittersweet, but I'm very happy the Purdue Boilermaker season. Matt Painter, the head coach, well-respected, well-deserved respect for the way he runs that program. So I guess I'm just trying to say hats off to all the Purdue Boilermakers out there and the men's basketball team at Purdue for a great season. Just one more game would have been nice, but I did watch both games. So I contributed to the ratings. There were 14-plus million that tuned into the men's final and 18-plus million that tuned into the women's final. So 4 million more people watched the Iowa Hawkeyes and the South Carolina Gamecocks in the women's final. Just truly amazing. Nobody would have ever thought that would have happened. Now, some say that it's due to the fact, contributing factors are that the men's final was on TBS, which they alternate with CBS every year. So you've got a lot of people. There were people in my office that couldn't watch the game because they don't have cable. They don't have and TBS isn't one of those. Now, I'm not exactly sure if you have Hulu, you can watch TBS. I don't know what platform you'd need to stream to be able to get TBS, or if it's on YouTube TV. I have no idea, but neither do the people that didn't watch the game. And they weren't going to go out and buy a streaming platform just to watch one game on TBS. So that sort of hurt the men's ratings. And then the other thing is, on the East Coast, the men's game started at 9:20 p.m. And if you're like most middle-aged Americans or older, by 10 o'clock on Monday night, you are out.
Yes, I concur. Anytime, and especially for collegiate sports, because you have such a vibrant alumni fan base, surely they know their fans are a little older, yet both college and basketball, for whatever reason, either kicks off or tips off far later than it needs to, in my humble opinion.
Well, you know, I guess you wouldn't want to have the final championship game the next weekend and drag it out for a Saturday or a Sunday afternoon on national TV. You just want to get the season over with after that Final Four on Saturday night. So I guess a Monday night championship game is, you know, people watch Monday night football, so it's not that out of the ordinary to watch sports on Monday night. But yeah, 9:20, that means the game's still going on 2 hours later at 11:20 p.m. Eastern. But you got to do that for the West Coasters. That, you know, you don't want to start the game at 6 and people are at work on Monday at 3 p.m. on the West Coast. They can't watch the game. So we'll just have to, you know, you also threw in maybe a contributing factor is while UConn has been dominant over the last 30 years, and this was their sixth national championship, I think they're a pretty geographic team. If you're in the Northeast, you root for UConn. I got to think if you live west of the Mississippi River, you don't even think about UConn basketball, do you? You know, does anybody on the West? I think people on the West Coast would watch North Carolina, Duke, Kansas. But you throw in a UConn, I don't think a small, tiny school in the Northeast is pulling much fan base on the west side of the United States.
No, I think you're absolutely correct. And we've oftentimes seen, especially with just the way collegiate sports have kind of played out with the name, image, likeness, and NCAA overview and everything, isn't it intriguing that a UConn that's probably not known for its sports prowess and other sports has been so basketball dominant? We've talked in the past that Indiana is such a hotbed for basketball in our state with Indiana University and Purdue University, yet we've kind of had a lack of championship basketball here. So that's why we were kind of hoping for the best with Purdue. It is tough to get to those games. And as you said, Adam, there's probably not a lot of UConn alumni, but there are probably a lot of UConn fans, but they have to be regional, I would think.
Now, you've got, you know, the excitement of that national championship. Yeah, I'm talking on behalf of the Purdue fans now, since I'm one of them. We had that excitement of the national championship. And also on that Monday was the total solar eclipse, which did go through Indianapolis, where I live, where you and I live. And I got to spend time with some Purdue grads. One in particular, a fraternity brother of mine, is Drew Feustel. He is a retired astronaut from NASA and a current media relations guru with NASA. So he was the gentleman, if you watched pretty much every single national broadcast from Good Morning America to CNN to Fox News, he was the astronaut they brought on to talk about how the solar eclipse is beneficial to space exploration and NASA. So it was great to see Drew as an ambassador of Purdue and an ambassador of NASA. But there was just such a buzz with that eclipse and the national championship. And here we are a week later, and the depression is still there. Not only, it's the weirdest thing. I've talked to my pals, not only because, you know, Purdue didn't win the national championship, but that eclipse had an effect on me. I had no idea how amazing it was going to be. It was by far the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. And wow, when it was over, especially the next day, when Purdue lost and I knew I wasn't going to see an eclipse for another 20 years at the earliest, maybe never in my life, I really got kind of sad.
Yes. I mean, here's what was interesting about the eclipse. You know, I did a lot of research leading up to the eclipse just because I was interested in it myself. But one of the things that was interesting that kept coming up in my research is a number of individuals have a very emotional response to the eclipse, up to the point where it can bring tears to your eyes.
I had heard this, in fact, the morning of, from those broadcasts I mentioned earlier. A lot of the national TV broadcasts were talking about the effect it has on your soul and the emotional effect the total solar eclipse has. And it just went in one ear out the other. And I'm just thinking, this will be something cool to see. And right. I sat in my backyard with Melissa and our glasses on, and about 1:50 p.m. is when you could start to see the edge of the moon come in front of the sun. And that lasted for a couple of hours until about, I don't know, about 4 o'clock is when the totality began. And it was, while watching the moon move in front of the sun, I'll just say that was very cool. But when totality hit, I absolutely was emotionally connected, and it affected my soul. And it was just the coolest thing. Anybody listening now that saw it too is like, you're right. It was unbelievable. I would have never last week said, I'm going to go to Montana in the year 2044 to see the total solar eclipse, the next one. But now I'm thinking about it. I mean, I might go. It was that cool. I want to see another one.
Yes. Yeah, it probably was the coolest thing that I too had experienced. I was with you. I was in my backyard, and it was just amazing. I loved all the all the electric eye lights in our neighborhood snapped on, and it didn't get dark as midnight, but it got pretty darn dark in the middle of a very sunny afternoon. And you're right, it was so emotional. There was a park not far from our house where people had set up their chairs and everything for an impromptu viewing party. And you could hear their human emotion as the totality came on. And that's pretty cool to hear people in a park 3/4 of a mile away. And it's that human experience of the gasp, the cheer, all at once.
Now, I did see a story. I won't get the names right, but I'll tell the story. This is an amazing total solar eclipse story. There's a middle school teacher somewhere in the northeast, just northeast of Buffalo, because the path of the total solar eclipse sort of started down around Dallas, went up through Little Rock, Arkansas, Indianapolis, through Cleveland, Ohio, through Buffalo, New York, and continued up through the northeast. So there was a small town in the northeast, up in Maine, I believe, the state of Maine. A junior high school science teacher has been telling his science class for the last 20 years that the next total solar eclipse in that town was going to be in the year 2024, and that he would have a viewing party at his house. And every single year, he told every single class that they were invited. And he told them back then, I don't know how I'm going to send out the invitation. I'll probably just put an ad in the paper, or if there's a better way to communicate, I'll do it through that. Well, lo and behold, Facebook made it super easy for him to invite every single student he'd ever had to come to his house for a viewing party like he'd been talking about for the last 20, 25 years. And he had no idea the response or if anybody would show up. And there were hundreds of former students that are now, in their 30s and 40s, that showed up to his house with lawn chairs to watch the total solar eclipse in his backyard. Cool. Is that the coolest story ever?
No, you gotta love that. Yeah. No, that's good.
He thought maybe like 5 or 6 people would show up, like the real lonely kids that had nowhere else to go. No, it was hundreds and hundreds of his former students that showed up. And it ended up being a little reunion because, out of the hundreds of students, you'd see 5, 6, 7 of them that were in your exact class that you haven't seen in 20 years. And what better emotional, soul-affecting way to reconnect with those people from your past than before and during and after a solar eclipse. It was cool. If you missed it, if you're listening to the show right now in an area that wasn't in totality, as they say, put it on your bucket list. I know that's a cliche. What's your bucket list? I mean, in everybody's top 5, total solar eclipse has to be on that list.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you.
Quick number 2 on my bucket list is a Purdue basketball national championship.
Yes. And with some luck, you won't have to wait too long for that. It's always a little frustrating. You and I both love college sports. And it is frustrating sometimes when our teams do well and they get close to the pinnacle, but they don't quite get to that pinnacle. Sometimes it's frustrating because you think, oh, that was our best opportunity. But you and I both know that Purdue basketball, I think, has taken a very nice turn over the last few seasons. So I'm going to guess that championship isn't too far off. Just not this year.
Well, we can hope, and in a positive outlook would say you the Purdue fan would venture to say this won't be Matt Painter's last Final Four.
Yeah, I would readily agree with you there.
Or I don't know if it'll be the last national championship for UConn. I mean, they are on a roll. The amazing stat I heard was they've been in 6 national championship games and they've won all 6.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's a team. And once again, you know, when they talk about your sports teams being the front porch of your university, think about UConn is now up there with names like Georgetown basketball. And then, you know, we even saw a recurrence. They were a low seed this year. But even the Wolfpack, the old Jimmy Valvano squad, who had been, you know, they had that emotional win for their national championship. Mm-hmm. They were back in the tournament this year. So, yeah, it's kind of cool. Gonzaga obviously tends to be an overachiever school. Most people can't pass a quiz on where it's at or how big it is. But by golly, they're in the tournament quite a bit, you know.
Well, I just want to give one final pat on the back and shout out and tip of the hat to women's sports and women's college basketball for the first time ever in history outrating the men's national championship game by 4 million viewers. Again, about 18 million watched Caitlin Clark, Iowa, and South Carolina play in the women's national championship, and about 14 million watched that Purdue-UConn national championship. Now, to wrap this up, I did hear that most likely the Indiana Fever in the WNBA will draft Caitlin Clark,
yes,
in the first top spot. And with those most likely rumors coming true, it has already been slated the Indiana Fever have the most nationally televised basketball games of any team in the WNBA for the next season.
That's impressive.
So those TV people, they're smart. They know how to get ratings. They're not dumb.
Well, and it, you know, this dovetails with a story that came up in my research this week. Caitlin Clark, you know, and technically at this point, she's still a collegiate athlete. She was offered a $5 million contract to play in the Big Three League. Now, you may not have heard of the Big Three League. It was created by Ice Cube, who is an interesting guy. Ice Cube's Big Three League, the league features former NBA players, and it's on a 3-on-3 format. Clark's deal would be for about 8 regular season games, with potentially a couple of playoff games. So, you know, for 10 games of basketball, and she's a sensation, $5 million. Now, it doesn't say whether she'll take that offer or not, but it is exactly as you said. She is expected to be the number one player in the upcoming WNBA draft. So what a boost college sports and the WNBA gets just from how great this athlete is and how much fun she is to watch.
It will be interesting to see how the college women's basketball is in the ratings next year without Caitlin Clark. She seemed to be the catalyst for this rise in popularity, although she wasn't the only reason. Like I said, undefeated South Carolina won the national championship. So they were a big part of these ratings too. So I'm sure it'll keep going and keep getting more popular and stretch into the like we were talking about the WNBA. It'll be more appointment television. I don't know if you've ever sat around and watched a WNBA game. I have not. But I'm telling you, I will next season. I know I will.
Yes. I've watched a couple. It's impressive. I mean, obviously, high caliber athletes. But it's like everything. All these sports, I loved this phrase when I first heard it, try to command eyeballs. And if you think about it, if you're NHL or North American soccer or what, it's hard to command eyeballs, you know?
Right. Yeah.
That great idea I had for that indoor glow-in-the-dark lacrosse league, it fell apart. Because I couldn't command eyeballs.
I think I saw that on the Ocho.
Yes. You might have seen it on Cheddar TV.
Now, are you familiar with, since I mentioned the Ocho, you know the Ocho from the film Dodgeball with Vince Vaughn?
Yes.
So,
yes, yes.
So there are times when, I believe it's just simply ESPN2, they rebrand their station to the Ocho and play very outlandish, unpopular, crazy sporting events. In the first weekend of the men's tournament, I was at a viewing party watching all the games, and somebody had on, you know, every single sports channel you could find to try to have some basketball on. And one of the TV screens had on the Ocho, and they were playing professional pillow fighting. Have you heard of this sport?
No, but I want to be a participant. There's no question.
It was like boxing, kind of UFC. They were kicking, punching, and fighting, but one hand had a pillow, and they could hit the opponent with that pillow. So anyway, we'll wait to see if women's pillow fighting gets higher ratings than the men's pillow fighting championship. That's a story for another day.
Absolutely. Hey, you know, I don't want to take away the good vibes from the total solar eclipse because it was very impressive. But Google had a press release the next day, and it stands to reason. Number one, Google search for those states that were in the path of the sun during the eclipse. My eyes hurt. I am not making fun of anybody who's had any kind of an eye injury, but how many times were you told? And I think in general, there's a couple of sacrosanct things you learn as a kid. Look both ways before crossing. You've heard that thousands of times. What's the other thing your folks told you about the sun?
Do not look directly at the sun.
Do not.
And that was great, Jade. So fun. I thought you were going to say the number one Google search was, when is the next eclipse or when is the next total solar eclipse?
Yes.
I was not expecting the number one Google search to be, my eyes hurt.
Yes, and that's a legit story.
Which
and
doesn't seem
I'll just
like a
leave
search.
It at that.
That seems like a statement more than a search.
The only thing that I can say is the fact that they were typing that request in on a visual medium at least indicated to me that they still had some eyesight. So maybe that's more positive than we know.
They still had vision.
Some vision.
The number one search wasn't my eyes herm.
No. Yeah. My eyes are misspelled. Yeah. You feel bad. And I got to tell you, I guess maybe it's just the old codger in me, but there's enough other stuff going wrong. I don't want to add burned eyes while looking at sun to a list of long medical maladies.
You know, I will say, when after totality, when the moon just moved, I mean an nth of an nth, and a tiny amount of sunshine came through, you couldn't look at it anymore.
Right.
Experts said you could look at it with your naked eye during totality.
At that exact moment.
And
yes.
I did, and it was amazing. I even looked through binoculars, and you could see just a pink ring of fire. It was so cool. And then I took the binoculars down. Totality was 4 minutes, which I didn't time, but in my mind, that 4 minutes lasted about 40 seconds or less. It went by so fast.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, the moon, you know, makes its way across, and just the tiniest amount of sunshine comes through, and you couldn't look at the sun anymore. It was so bright, and it's just amazing how over 99% of the sun can be covered, and it's still so powerful you can't look at it.
That's correct.
My eyes hurt.
Later, did the moon hit you in the eye like a big pizza pie?
Because I wish.
That's amore. That's amore. Here's something that's kind of wild and wacky, maybe happening in your area. We've always braced ourselves for flooding during early spring months because we do seem to get an awful lot of rain. We've had regional flooding in our state. But the reason why I bring this up, there was an extraordinary amount of local flooding that happened in Indianapolis. We're in, not the largest of urban areas, but, there's pretty much a road going any place you need to go. Well, a number of motorists found themselves basically about mere height high in water in a couple of spots because they did not follow the age-old rule. The other age-old rule, do not drive into water that you are not certain what the depth is.
Is that side view mirror or rear view mirror height?
Side view mirror, but one of the cars looked like regular rear view mirror.
That's a great point. If you don't know the depth of the water of the street you're about to drive through, do not attempt it. You don't know how low that's going to go and how. Once you've heard horror stories of cars that once they get to mere depth, if there's a current, it doesn't matter that you're in a 2,000-pound vehicle. The current is going to treat that like a feather, and you could be washed away.
Yeah, and the bad thing is, obviously, you put yourself in great danger, and then first responders have to put themselves in danger to come and retrieve you. So definitely, one of the ones that was posted on social media earlier today showed an individual driving their car around a parks department pickup truck that was purposely parked so you wouldn't go past it and go into the water. However, this individual said, "Hey, I'm Superman. Perhaps you've seen my stunt driving skills. Watch this."
Yeah, this. I'm no dummy. I've got an SUV. I can handle this flood. Yeah,
I got it handled.
Don't be a hero. Do not.
Adam and I love any kind of an event that raises money, especially if it's a kind of an eclectic event. This was a cool story. Well, bless you, Pooch. Our rescue dog decided it needed to sneeze. This is nothing to sneeze at, fans. Okay. This is a rodeo held in Little Rock. In fact, it's one of the biggest fundraisers in Arkansas. They call it Rodeo in the Rock. It's hosted by the Diamond State Rodeo Association. It's going to be held this year, April 26th through the 28th, at the Arkansas State Fairgrounds. But it's basically 2 days of rodeo action, and they've got all kinds of stuff, live entertainment. They even have a rodeo school, Adam, and you'll be pleased to know that I did sign you up for it.
I'm hoping the rodeo school makes the Final Four next year.
Yes. They have quite a sports program, the rodeo school does. I think rodeo clowning, I think that's the name of their mascot.
That was my major at Purdue. Rodeo clowning. Yeah.
But yeah, 3 days or 2 days of meet and greets, rodeo school, live entertainment. They've got horse racing, barrel racing, a silent auction, vendors, and they are expected to raise about $100,000 for a number of charities, including local food banks. So that's going on in Little Rock. And we do urge it, if you've ever had sort of an inkling of, hey, I've got an idea for something that could raise money, give it a try, because it can start out small and get big.
Fantastic rodeo fundraising update, Jay. Thank you so much. I appreciate our listeners also tuning in. You can listen to this podcast or this show in podcast form or any of our recent shows along the podcast avenue on our website, adamritzshow.com.
The Adam Ritz Show is recorded live in studio at the Vibonomics Worldwide Headquarters. Learn more about the Vibonomics Audio Out-of-Home Marketplace at Vibonomics.com. For information on this broadcast, including past on-demand episodes, interview submissions, and syndication contacts, visit AdamRitzShow.com.